this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. I'm Cheryl, and I invite you to join me on my quest to find out, why are people homeschooling? How do you do it? What are the differences in how people homeschool from region to region? And should I homeschool my kids? Stick with me as I unfold the answers to each of these questions week by week. Thank you for joining us today. Here with me is Katie, a mom of five. Katie's story was interesting because her older two kids started out in public school and now they are all homeschooled. So Katie, thank you for joining me today. I'm going to start by having you give us the ages of your kids and then you can just go into how long you've been homeschooling.
Okay, great. So my eldest daughter is 20 years old and my second daughter is 18. And then I have 11-year-old son, a 9-year-old son, and a 6-year-old
wow,
daughter.
That's awesome. You look great. I don't know if anybody's able to watch any of this on YouTube, but you look great. A 20-year-old. Oh. Go ahead. Yeah. Okay, so how long have you been homeschooling and what kind of made you take the decision to leave public school and start homeschooling?
Yeah, so I started homeschooling in the fall of 2017 and so my son that's 11, he has a late summer birthday, and when he turned 5, I didn't feel like he was mature enough to go to school yet. So I decided to redshirt him, which basically means I held him back a year with the intention of sending him to kindergarten when he turned 6. And the day that he would have started kindergarten at 5 years old, he brought me a Bob book and read it to me. And I had no idea that he knew how to read. He had taught himself just some basic CVC words. And some two-letter words. And so I just made it a routine part of our day to read together for 15 minutes a day where I'd have him read out loud to me. And I taught him some just basic things like vowel teams and things that I already knew just from being a reader myself. And silent E, we used some of the Leapfrog videos. And when he turned 6 and I signed him up for kindergarten, he was reading at about a second grade reading level. So I put him in a local charter school that my girls had attended K through 8. And when they were there, the school was fairly advanced. So when I put him in, I thought he might kind of like be waiting around for a couple months until other kids catch up, but then it'll be just fine. And he started bringing home like tracing sheets that were pre-writing skills, like curly Qs and things like that. And I thought, okay, that's fine. But it just felt like he wasn't bringing home anything to show me that he was progressing. So I went to the teacher and we had a discussion and she basically said, him and one other boy can read. I had them sit in the corner and read to each other while I teach the rest of the class. And while there wasn't necessarily anything wrong with that, I just kind of felt like I don't want him to waste a year. Like I kind of felt like maybe we'd be wasting a whole year by keeping him there. So I started to look at other options, like maybe leaving the charter school and putting him in the local public school and having him skip up into first grade. I looked at having him tested to skip kindergarten and go into first grade at the charter school. I just looked at lots of different options. And one day, it was October that year, so he'd been in school about 8 weeks. I was driving and it just hit me like a bolt of lightning. I need to homeschool. And the funny thing was that I never considered homeschooling before. I'd never met anybody that homeschooled. I didn't have anybody in my family that homeschooled. It just completely hit me out of nowhere. And I'm a religious person. And I prayed to God and asked him if the reason why I felt so strongly about that was because that's what where he was directing me. And I received confirmation that yes, God was directing me to start homeschooling. So I had a friend that added me to a Facebook group, a homeschooling Facebook group. And I basically said, I'm pulling my son out of school next week. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, just tell me what to do. Somebody just tell me what to do and I'll do it.
Some people might ask, so you held him back a year, but that obviously had nothing to do with his intelligence. Was that more that it's like a, I know for me, I'm going through the same thing. At 5 years old, I don't feel my son is ready to be gone from his home, his mom, for like 8 to 10 hours a day. It's a huge leap from he's in a 3-day a week preschool right now for 2.5 hours, and it's just going to be so drastic for him. Was that why you were holding him back? He obviously was intelligent if he was reading.
Yeah, so that's a great question. Yeah, for me, it was about maturity. I just felt like he was still so young and that I still, he was kind of my little buddy and I just didn't want to give him up.
Yeah.
But
Hey,
yeah,
that's fine to be
absolutely.
selfish. It's your baby. You made him. I want to keep him with me.
Yeah, it wasn't because of intelligence. I also have a couple of nieces and nephews that have similar birthdays. And my sister had chose to hold her kids back, and she just talked about all the benefits that she saw as far as them catching on to things quicker and things like that. And teachers I had talked to had said that kids' attention spans are better if you wait a year. You know, there was a couple of things like that, but it basically boiled down to maturity.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's really beautiful that, you ask something and, you are shown. And I feel like for me in this quest of should I homeschool, should I not, I keep asking. And I think God's like, how many ways do you want me to show you? Come on. But this podcast is like so wonderful because I'm still on the fence of what to do in September because I just never envisioned myself a homeschool mom. I mean, I was the total cliche of like, no, they'd be weird. Like, are we gonna like sew our clothes and, wear them too? I sound so ignorant. I know people are like rolling their eyes, but it's true. I'm happy to admit that because now my eyes are really open to what homeschooling is. And it's so beautiful that you get to have these experiences with your family and really create a bond. And I really feel like whether it's the government or society or whatever is trying to tear apart the family at every seam, that this is just such a beautiful way to, I don't know, grow together as one family. And I have so much to, I would say, relearn, but as a public school graduate, learn. I think, I have a lot to learn. So those were your reasons for homeschooling your one son. What about the older kids that were in public school?
So my older two actually have never been homeschooled,
Okay.
just my younger three. So my older two went to a local charter school K through eight, and then they transitioned to public high school. When I started homeschooling in 2017, I think they were in eighth and ninth grade. And I offered to bring them home. They didn't want to. And at that age, I don't feel like it's something that should be forced because when I started homeschooling, it wasn't for safety reasons. That's the only time I would actually force a child that age to do something if it was for safety. And we didn't really have those concerns. And so they actually stayed in the public system. But my younger three have been exclusively
Do you
homeschooled.
ever feel like your younger three will resent you one day for homeschooling them since you see that your older two enjoy public school? Or I don't know if enjoy is the right word, but obviously they want to be there.
That's an interesting question because I wouldn't say my oldest to look back on high school and think it was worth it.
Yeah.
That's what's been interesting to me. Both of them, now that they're out of school, have said that they will homeschool their own children and that
Really?
they, yeah,
Wow,
and
that's
that
so
they,
interesting.
yeah. So my oldest daughter, she was involved, she's a very social butterfly that led to her wanting to be there. But there was one day when she was a junior, she came home during lunch and I was doing sentence diagramming with my son. And she stopped and she said, "Mom, my teacher's trying to teach this in class." And she was a junior and he would have been like third grade. And that's when I kind of realized, like, the education here is not that great. Like, he's not missing anything academically. My second daughter actually ended up doing GED route because of COVID. She was in and out of school. I mean, she'd be in school, she'd sit by somebody that had COVID, have to quarantine for 10 days, in and out. And she ended up just wanting to do GED route. So she did that. But no, I don't feel like my younger kids are going to resent me at all because I've kind of talked to them about what public school is like. And they think that sitting in a desk for 6 hours would be pure torture. And I try to make sure that I'm giving them the same opportunities for fun. So like we still go out and do field trips. We do things with friends. I'm not so great with like holiday stuff, but I'm trying to be better with that. So I'm trying to give them the same opportunities that they would m miss from public school.
Right.
So I don't feel like resentment. I mean, obviously you never know. They're young. But I
Yeah.
don't feel like they're going to wish they would have spent their childhood at
Right.
desk.
And what a couple people have told me is Yeah, your kid will miss out on some things if you homeschool, but that's okay. You're making up for it in other ways. Yeah. And also, it's just okay. We look at it as, well, I had homecoming and whatnot. They're not going to know that that was something that they missed out on because they didn't have it to begin with. And then I think we have these fond memories of it, but was the actual event itself that wonderful? It was probably the planning of it. Like, ooh, what dress am I going to get? Where am I going to get my hair done? And in reality, you put the dress on that day and you're like, oh my gosh, this looks horrible. My hair is terrible. I think I ripped my hair out at every prom and redid it in my bedroom. My mom's like, what did we spend the money for getting your hair done? So it's like, it's funny how you look back at these things and then, you know, I'm going to be 40 next year. So it's like, was it really that big of a deal? No, not in the grand scheme of life. And then what you are giving them, because you are going on these, you can do more field trips and you're not sitting at a desk for 6 to 8 hours a day. I mean, that's huge. So what sacrifices did you have to make in order to homeschool?
Yeah. Sorry. I just want to go back to the first question or Absolutely. The original question real quick. I've talked about a lot with my husband in particular is that we tend to think of our school experiences as public school students and think our kids are missing out on those experiences. School's right. not like what it was when we were younger.
Yes.
So they're not really missing out. What I see is that there's less opportunities for sports and music. There's less opportunity for parties. It's all been taken over by academia. Like, there's not a lot of other stuff. And quite honestly, a lot of the social events that are put on have been corrupted by mental health issues and breakdown of the family. And so they're not really missing out. And it's okay to mourn the childhood that we had, because maybe we did have a great childhood and a great experience of public school.
What sacrifices did you have to make in order to make homeschooling happen for you and your family?
To be honest, a clean house. I have worked on and off the whole time we've been married. But when I started homeschooling, I was just, I don't want to say just a stay-at-home mom. I was a stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. So I didn't give up a career. I didn't give up like health insurance. I didn't give up income. None of that really was a sacrifice. Truly, when I think about it, the biggest sacrifice was a clean house, because you're all home together all the time. And when everyone's at home, like, you just, the house gets messy. People live there. It's a very lived in house. Also, like, a child could be working on an art project and it takes a couple of days. And so it's out, you know, for a couple of days, or one kid makes a fort and you leave the fort up for a few days. It honestly, that's what I feel like the biggest sacrifice was for me, was a clean house.
Well, I think, and it was probably a quiet house before. Maybe if they were all in school, you gave up, you know, the, okay, this is my me time. And I'm sure you look at it and say, but I'm gaining so much more. Just like anything that's challenging, it's always more worthwhile in the end. But you could have been completely selfish and said, nope, this is my me time. Get scurry along. You didn't.
Yeah. When I started homeschooling, my youngest was 8 months old and my fourth was he four? I think he was four. And so I already kind of had like kids still at home. So yeah. It wasn't like I wasn't really necessarily giving up a quiet house.
It would have been by now.
Yeah, that's true.
So on your best day, what does your homeschooling life look like?
Yeah. So we're kind of naturally early risers. I don't set alarms. All of us are usually up by 7:30 naturally. And then we cook breakfast, we eat a nice breakfast together, we do a devotional of some kind, and then I might do what we call morning basket. You might have heard that in homeschooling groups, but it's basically just a basket of literature, books around about different topics. So we might read a little section on history, we might do a picture study from a famous artist, we might listen to a song from a famous composer, we might read an act from a Shakespeare play. Just something that's beautiful. And I loop through those. So I don't do those every day, but we do something from our basket.
That is such a great idea.
And then I, yeah. So Pam Barnhill, she is a longtime homeschooler. She has a podcast, Your Morning Basket. She also has a book she wrote called Better Together. And she's kind of the one that coined the term morning basket. She has lots of videos and things on that. So if you ever want to check out what a morning basket is, she's a great resource.
Absolutely. Maybe she'll come on here.
Yeah, she'd be great. And then we could move into family subjects. So we do all of our social studies and science family style. And then from there, I will have my younger two start on some independent work while I help my oldest son with anything he needs help with. Where he is 11, he only probably needs me for about 30 minutes. So I try to get him his studies done with him done and out of the way so he can move on to his independent work for the rest of the day. And then when he's done, I go to my second son and help him with his stuff and then move him on to independent work. And then I work with my youngest. So I do family learning and then I move oldest to youngest. And my oldest son is mostly independent with his math and language arts. So, and then the other ones I'm still helping quite a bit. And we're usually done. Like we start around 8:30. We're usually done by lunchtime. Then we have the rest of the day for sports or free time.
How long does it take you to prep for, I don't know if you prep for a week or a month or a quarter?
Oh, yeah. So I'm not a huge fan of like super involved curricula where I have to do a ton of prep. So I try to pick curricula that either is open and go or I can prep at like the beginning of the school year and have it ready for the year. So I will usually do a lot of prep in the summer. I'll do any printing I have to do and printing and binding of PDF curriculum. I'll make supply lists and things like that, make sure I have all of our books. But I do kind of a mini planning probably once a week on Sunday evenings. I just look at what we have for the week, make a little note of books I need to pull from the bookshelf or any supplies I need to get out of the supply closet or anything I need to go purchase from the store that week. But that doesn't take very long. I usually spend half an hour prepping on Sunday nights for the week.
And what curriculum do you use? How did you kind of come to the conclusion that that's what you wanted to use? And do you switch it up?
So I want to say one thing about curriculum. I've been homeschooling for a while, and I actually was a curriculum consultant for a while. So I actually helped people pick their curriculum. And I want to say there's no bad curricula out there.
Okay.
Like it's all good for some reason. But the best curricula is the one you'll use. So like, for example, if you're not super crafty, probably don't pick the curricula that has a lot of crafts.
Good advice.
You can, you can grow into that. I was not a crafty person, but I was able to grow into that over the years and be able to do more of the crafty stuff. But initially I couldn't do that. So, and if you're overwhelmed with the thought of planning, maybe an open go curricula is the best for you. So I just want to say that, like, there's nothing, no bad curricula, just the right one is the right one that will work for you and your family.
Is that how it's termed, open go? Like if somebody was like, I am terrible at planning and I don't have the time to do it, they could Google open go curriculum?
Yeah. Open and go.
Open and go. Okay. Thank you.
And I also want to say for math in particular, I don't suggest jumping around in curricula unless there's a real necessity to switch. Like do your research, pick a good one. I would say stick through it, stick with it for at least a year. If you want to switch, switch at the year point for the next school year. Okay. Just because math is so skill-based that a lot of times if you're jumping around a lot, it gets confusing for kids if they're being taught all these different ways to do math.
That makes sense.
So I'm not saying don't switch. I'm just saying like pick something and try to give it a good go for a year or so before you switch. Yeah. So what I use for math, all three of my children use the Good and the Beautiful Math. Mm-hmm. It's a spiral math, meaning they're taught a concept and then they move on and learn another concept. And then they kind of learn maybe four or five concepts and then spin around and review those again and add on. So they call it a spiral curricula that way. Okay. It kind of spirals around. Yeah, we tried a couple other ones and that has been our best fit. So my older son tried two others and the Good and the Beautiful has been the best fit for him. And then the younger two have only used that. And yeah, we really enjoy it. It's got some hands-on components. The K-3 math is parent-led, meaning you actually read it to the child, read the lesson out loud to the child. And then grades 4 and up are independent. So the child watches a video that has the instruction and they do their work independently.
Oh, wow. That's good to know. I have heard of The Good and the Beautiful and I've heard great things about it. And when you were talking earlier about spending certain amount of time with each child and then independent work, I'm thinking, well, that's got to be a little hard. Like, are you trusting, you know, your fourth grader to do independent work, but knowing that there's a video to go along with it, that's really cool. I guess I never sat down and looked all at the curriculum to see what a year looks like, but that makes sense.
Yeah. And every level that's independent comes with an answer key. And so I do check their work after they're done and anything that they have missed, they go back and fix. You don't have awesome. To worry about doing the math yourself to figure out if they got it right.
That's awesome. I was just at mom's group today and they, one of the moms was saying how in her son's class, there was like 45 students and there's no way that a teacher is expected to check the work of 45 students. I mean, I know they take the tests home and grade them there, but to be able to go over and review with them, no, you got this wrong, and this is why, and this is how we arrived to the right answer, is where all the learning is.
Yeah, in fact, I wish I knew the video off the top of my head, but there was a video I watched one time of a psychology professor explaining how learning happens. And she said a lot of times kids learn through errors better than they learn through getting the answer right the first time, because it teaches them to critically think at it, to look at it objectively. And so we should not be afraid of our children making errors. That's a great point. So for language arts, I kind of break language arts up into goals I have for the different ages. So for example, I don't really teach grammar to my kids in K-3 because I just think, what's the point of learning about nouns and verbs when you're learning how to read? Like, it's something they can learn when they're older and they and they've developed a little more. The other thing is that I believe that the brain only has a certain capacity to hold information at one time in short-term memory and moving it to long-term memory. And I just feel like in the K-3 grades, the focus should really be on phonics, learning how to read, and handwriting, and not story writing, just handwriting, getting the motor skills honed down so that you can write. So for my K-3 kids, my absolute favorite curricula that I hands down recommend to everybody is all about reading.
Okay.
It's a phonics program that uses the Orton-Gillingham approach, which means it's multisensory. They learn through sight, sound, touch. They learn all those different ways. And my older son is in the, not my oldest son, sorry. Out of my two, my younger son, he's like third grade. He's in the last level of all about reading right now. It's been my favorite phonics. And then for handwriting, I like The Good and the Beautiful handwriting. We tried Handwriting Without Tears, which is another really popular one. But Handwriting Without Tears uses a double line method. They don't have the dotted middle line. And my kids really struggled to correctly size their letters without that middle line.
And wow, that's interesting.
So they needed that dotted middle line to know, like, when they're doing their H, like they just bump the middle line. So we really like The Good and the Beautiful handwriting. And each handwriting sheet has some sort of art project, like coloring or tracing or drawing mazes. And a lot of the copy work they're doing are maybe proverbs or famous sayings or skills like writing the days of the week. And so I just have really enjoyed The Good and Beautiful handwriting. And then I'm not a big fan of busy work for busy work's sake, but I do sometimes use some other things to keep my kids occupied while I'm helping somebody else. And I like Nessie Reading and Spelling. That is an online program that is a phonics program that follows a similar approach to All About Reading. So I feel like it complements All About Reading very well. Explode the Code workbooks. Those are just cute little phonics workbooks where they can match and trace and write three-letter words. And they can be done independently by kids as young as kindergarten age. And so I like those as well to kind of sometimes give a young child something to do while I'm busy with somebody else. We also really like the Draw Right Now series, and it's Draw Right, like W-R, right? Those are cute little books that they're themed. And so there might be like farm animals or ocean animals, and it teaches them how to draw an animal. And then it has a couple sentences for them to copy about the animal or the farm picture. And those are just fun kind of handwriting art books that they can also do.
So for anyone listening now trying to like run around and get a pen and pencil or something, I do come back and note all of these and write them in the show description or the show notes. So check those out after.
Perfect. Yeah. I do sometimes kind of rapid fire information out, so you can slow me down.
No, that's great. And the last episode was the same. And I was like, oh, I need to take notes. Hold on. And then it was shaking my computer. And I went back after and put everything in the show notes. And it's so helpful, because if it's helpful to me, I'm sure it's going to be helpful to other people. So we really appreciate you elaborating on all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. For science, we've used The Good and the Beautiful Science for 5 years. And we really like those. They're open and go. All of the Good and Beautiful is open and go. So if you're a brand new homeschooler, it's a great curricula for that if you want that open and go. But you pick a topic, like say you want to learn about space, you can get their space unit. You can get paleontology or meteorology. And so you just buy the unit that you want to learn about in science. Each lesson, there's about 10 to 14 lessons in each unit. And there's tons of hands-on projects in The Good and Beautiful for experiments and things like that. Nothing that's overwhelming. If you're brand new and you're not crafty like me, it's not an overwhelming thing. But anyway, I asked my son if he wanted to stay with The Good and the Beautiful, and he said he loved all the experiments, but he wanted to do something else since we'd done that for 5 years. So this year we actually are not using a formal science curricula. We're just watching documentaries. We're reading books. I really like Curiosity Stream. It's an online streaming service for just documentaries. And it's $20 a year, like a one-time fee of $20. And you have a subscription for a year to Curiosity Stream. So we watch a lot of documentaries on Curiosity Stream. We really like Brain Pop and Generation Genius, which are also their online science videos. Brain Pop has more than just science, but Generation Genius has great science videos. And then we read science comics or nature books, and we are doing science kind of more organically that way. I'm also a huge fan of Magic School Bus, if you've got younger kids.
Yes.
Yeah.
I started that with my son, and I'm learning right along with them.
Yeah. Or Wildcrats. I mean, my little six-year-old, she can tell you all sorts of stuff about animals from watching Wildcrats. I do really like The Good and the Beautiful Science. I'm sure we'll probably use it again at some point, but we just needed something a little bit different. Next year, I'm going to be using Guest Hollow for science, which is a literature-based curricula that is for the whole year. I just remembered I didn't tell you what I did for language arts for the older kids.
Lay it on me.
Okay, I'm going to back up and tell you that I got talking and moved on. So for grades 4 through 6, I like to work on skills to prepare them for higher levels. So finishing up handwriting, starting cursive. I like to look at spelling curricula if they need help with spelling. And then just making sure that they're ready to start writing and maybe doing some research. And so this year my son is using Michael Clay Thompson grammar, which we've really enjoyed that. We still continue with The Good and the Beautiful handwriting. We use All About Spelling, which is from the same company that produces All About Reading for spelling curricula. And then I like to look on OutSchool for classes that teach them study skills or note-taking skills, research skills, and kind of outsource a few of those classes onto OutSchool. OutSchool is a website where you can sign up kind of like a la carte classes. So you might want to take a science class or a history class or a class in engineering. And you go in there and you can search by topic, by age, and you can sign up for classes through Zoom. It's K-12. Actually, I think there are some preschool classes as well, but all the teachers have passed background checks and everything. Like, it's a safe site for your children. And you can sign up for a one-time class. They just go to one class, or you can sign up for every day for a week, or you can sign up for a semester-long class. There's tons of options for classes on OutSchool. And
wow.
Yeah, so we've done a few history ones. Like, we did one on the War of 1812. And my son did a reoccurring one for 6 weeks that was the Christmas Carol, where they read a chapter a week and discussed a Christmas Carol. So lots of different options on OutSchool. And then I haven't gotten to the high school levels yet, but my plan for high school is to move into literary analysis and writing, like story writing, narratives, and research in the higher grades. So I haven't gotten that to that point yet, but that's kind of how I break down our language arts. I do really like Institute for Excellence in Writing for writing curricula for the older grades. If you choose IEW, they do have a video series where you can actually watch, the student can watch the video and then write and be mostly independent with it. And so that's a great option for a writing curricula. What they do with IEW is they look at a piece already written, and then they make like a keyword outline and add some things to it, and then they rewrite it in their own words. And so if you have a kiddo that's like, looks at a blank page and they're like, I just don't know what to write. Like, maybe they can write, but they just have no clue what to write. IEW kind of takes that component out of it, where they're, since they're rewriting stuff that's already written. So I really like IEW for that reason.
That's cool, because the woman I interviewed in our last podcast, she mentioned a couple of the curriculums that you mentioned now, and she mentioned IEW as well. Can you explain to me? So I have a 4.5-year-old, and his preschool sent home a letter saying, like, some of the kids, they're 3 and 4. Some of the kids don't know all the letters that we're reviewing. And again, I said, it's 3 days a week for 2.5 hours that he's there. So it's like, well, you went over for like 20 minutes of the week. But so they're like, get some flashcards and work with them on your own. So I got the flashcards and we're doing this. You know, he's looking at me, he's like, I don't know what that is. Okay, well, 5 minutes in, it's N, Colin. The letter is N. Oh, okay, Mom, it's N. A minute later, Colin, what is this letter? I don't know. Is it W? It's like, ah! But I'm doing it wrong. I am completely aware I'm doing it wrong. But what is phonics? I've heard of it. You know, we all heard about Hooked on Phonics growing up. I hear about phonics more and more in the homeschool community. I've never actually looked into what it is.
That's a great question. So I just want to say I actually had to take a literacy course online, and I just finished it like a week ago for my online job that I do part-time. And there was a fascinating video I watched by a neuro research about how our brain learns how to read. Something that I learned in that I wasn't aware of before is that it actually is not a natural process for our brains. That our brains actually, like, we were not born with something in our brain that one day will normally
We were the hunter-gatherer thing. There was no room for reading in there. We created that.
Yeah. And he said that our brains are primed to look for pictures, and that this area in our brain, we actually have to train it to identify letters and connect it to sounds. And we actually have to form a new pathway in the brain when we're learning how to read.
Hmm.
So it's not a natural process that's taught. The other thing is that he said English, of course, we all know this, is the hardest language in the world to learn. And it takes a child on average 2 to 3 years to learn how to read. So whereas a student in Italy would only take 3 months to learn how to read because of their alphabet.
Wow.
Yeah. So because in Italy, each letter only has one sound. Whereas,
imagine that.
Yeah. In fact, there's a vowel combination I'm teaching my son in his reading program that has 6 sounds. So how you have to learn how to figure out which sound out of the 6 to use in a word. So English is hard. But so phonics is kind of an all-encompassing term for connecting letters to sounds and recognizing that letters represent sounds. There is an argument out there that learning the letter names is not even really all that important because really you need to know the sounds. But I will say that from that video I watched, I do think learning the letter sound, like having to create that neural pathway, I think is important. So it's knowing that A says a-a-ah, knowing that letter C can say k or s. So learning that letters have sounds is phonics. And it's also called decoding. So decoding is when you take a word and you're breaking it down into sounds or parts. That's one aspect of phonics. Another aspect is phonemic awareness, which is basically hearing sounds and producing sounds, being able to hear and produce sounds, and then connect those to what we call a grapheme, which is the written form of the sound, being able to connect all of those. That's phonics is being able to decode words by their sounds is kind of the most basic definition.
Perfect. Thank you. No, that makes a lot of sense. Do they have phonics in Italy since they only have one sound per letter, or is it just extremely easier?
I'm sure they have some sort of reading component or curricula, but I don't know. I just, from that video, I thought.
The Italian, the Italian part of the phonics corporation isn't doing so well, but the American version, the stocks are up. People have to keep ordering it year after year after year.
Oh, I just found that so fascinating that based on your language can determine how fast you can learn how to read. That was fascinating to me. So anyway.
Yeah. Socializing is a big thing for, you know, don't homeschool your kids. You know, they're not going to have any socialization, which clearly is not true. So what do you do to socialize your kids?
I like to tell people you don't socialize kids, you socialize dogs, because dogs have to be taught how to behave, right? And children do too, but it's not something that's just like explicit. Like you don't send your kids to school to learn how to socialize.
Right. Well, and like during COVID, didn't that just totally show you what socializing is turned into? Sitting at a desk with 6 feet away from your partner, you know, the person next to you with a mask on and plexiglass surrounding you. And that's what we're supposed to be fearful of missing out on.
Yeah, I just think the socialization thing is funny. And, you know, I'll say something that might seem controversial, but I feel like social skills have a lot more to do with your family dynamics than whether you homeschool or not. Because we all know kids we went to school with that struggled socially in public school. And if you're active in the homeschool community, you'll realize that there's all sorts of types of the homeschool, just like there are all sorts of people in public school. But yeah, as far as what we do, our kids are very involved in organized sports. I know that's not something that everybody likes. A lot of people that homeschool like their freedom, but my husband is an athlete and that's something that's important to him. We don't necessarily care if our kids are super competitive. Like we're not really competitive with sports so much, but we do a lot of organized sports. We have done swim team in the past. My youngest is on swim team right now. I put all my kids in swim team when they're between the ages of 5 and 6, and they stay on the swim team until they can swim the whole length of the pool for the class duration. And then at that point, if they don't want to continue, they don't have to. I just feel like swimming is an important life skill. There's lots of lakes where we live and lots of ditches where farms where there's ditches and things, and to me swimming is important.
I agree. Then, we have our son in swim as well, and I drive like 40 minutes away to go to a 30 minute class and come 40 minutes home. It is one of the fears of mine. We have a pool. They say drowning mostly happens, like, you know, when you're not like at the pool swimming. It's when the kids are playing and the pool cover's on and someone falls in with their clothes on or something and, you know, gets sunken in. But I won't give, you know, any more morbid thoughts right now. But it is so, so, so important. So that's awesome. Yeah. Can you guys be in school sports in Idaho as a homeschooler?
Yes, it's actually written into our laws that schools cannot deny homeschoolers access to sports or dual enrollment as well. So dual enrollment means they can take one one or two classes at the public school and do the rest homeschooling. I will say really? Some schools, yeah. So
not
some
in schools, New York.
Yeah.
We are shunned, baby.
Idaho has the most homes, as far as laws go, is one of the most homeschool friendly states to live in. So that, that's right. Been
Note
a real blessing. Yeah. But,
you guys got some good farm acreage out there too.
Yes.
How about your income taxes? You got those?
Oh, you know, historically it's been lower cost of living, but we've had a lot of people moving here and it's pushing up the cost of living.
I can't imagine why. They're all New Yorkers. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah. I won't go into the people moving here because if you're from here, there's a saying you're from another state.
There's a distinction.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, so, and then my kids are in tennis as well. And then they do piano lessons. We have done co-ops on and off. I figured out I'm not a huge fan of co-ops. Sometimes you have to try things just to see if you like mm-hmm. them. I will say you need to be active in the homeschool community just so you can find your people. Like it took me, it probably took me 4.5 years to find like our people. We found a family that we get along with. All of our kids are the same ages and our kids all get along. And it was like the heavenly choirs opened up in the skies and we had found our homeschool friends. So I will say that, you know, it's good to put yourself out there and meet other homeschoolers. So you have some friends to do things with. Like it's more fun to experience things with friends. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So we are currently involved in a one day a week co-op, but next year we're just going to do kind of an unofficial get together with my friend and maybe one other family, and our three families will just go out and do stuff together versus signing up for a co-op. We do church groups as well. We live in a very family friendly neighborhood and we have neighborhood kids that come over after public school.
They're like, what did you do all day? Well, I went to the museum. I went for a hike. What'd you do? I sat at my desk with my mask on. No, I'm kidding. That's just New York.
There's this family that has a couple boys, my same boys' ages, and they came over one day and we were doing some art project and one of the boys under his breath said, I would never be able to do this at home. Like we've become known as like the kid house. When you already have so many kids, it's like, what's two or three more, you know? So we just,
right.
Yeah. We've kind of become the neighborhood kid house.
So they're getting a ton of socialization right there. And actually, you know, when they're in school, they're not taught to socialize. They're taught to be quiet and listen to the teacher. You know, you stand in line, you be quiet. You hopefully can socialize at lunch and recess, but it's not like you're going to school to talk all day long. At least that's not what they want you to be doing when you're there. That's probably what I did, but it's not what I was supposed to be doing.
I think socialization happens through social cues. And so... Mm-hmm. Your kids are going to be learning social cues in any environment they're in. It's you as a parent get to help them choose or navigate your family to be in the environment you want them to be in to learn the correct social cues. So if they're in public school, they're going to get socialization, but they're going to be socialized by 30 to 40 kids their own age. And whatever those kids are bringing to school and passing on to your children, that's the type of socialization they're going to get versus in your own home. You can kind of choose what influences you bring into the home, including the people that are around your children. And so they can mm-hmm. learn social skills from older people like siblings or friends that are older, from being in co-ops with older kids, with mixed age groups, or being around grandparents more. And oftentimes you'll see that homeschoolers, while they sometimes will appear more innocent according to like their social knowledge, their maturity is usually much higher than kids in public school for that reason. So all kids are socialized, but what it comes down to is what environment they're learning those social skills from.
This conversation has been so wonderful, and I hope you'll come back on as the podcast, you know, keeps going and going, because we're in the, you know, early days of this, and your information, especially the information about how we learn, is so helpful. And the knowledge that you have about your curriculum, even though you're saying that, oh, I'm not a big planner, it's, you really did take the time to get into why this works and why this doesn't. And it's so fascinating to hear about. What was your biggest fear about homeschooling before you started?
Oh gosh, it was the unknown. Like, I am very much a person that likes being in my comfort zone. Like, I like knowing what's going to happen. I'm the type that when I go on vacation, like, I'm not like a super detailed planner, but I like plans. Like, I like knowing where I'm going and what I'm doing. Just, I really did feel like I was jumping off a ledge and not knowing what was at the bottom. I didn't know a single other person that homeschooled. I didn't even know where to find curriculum. I remember Googling homeschool curriculum. Like, I just didn't even know like where to find information. I worried about whether I would have enough patience. I worried, what if I fail my kids? Like, what if I try to teach them and like they don't learn anything, you know, from me, you know? Yeah, I worried about, I didn't really worry too much about giving up my time, but there was a little bit of that of like, can I do this? Because I knew.
How will I find the time?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I knew that I was making a commitment. Like, I wasn't going to be the type that jumped into homeschooling and then like just we utterly floundered and I didn't do school with my kids. Like, that was not going to be me. I knew that if I was going to do it, I was making a commitment that we were going to be doing school. Like, I wasn't going to just be loosey goosey, whatever. Like, it was going to be something that I committed to, that I somehow found accountability for. Like, I took it as a very serious thing to start, because I didn't want to fail my children. And so that was my biggest fear. And, you know, I will say that when I thought God was leading me to homeschool, I prayed because I could not move forward. I literally remember praying and saying like, God, I know this is what you want me to do, but I am so terrified that I can't move forward unless I know that this is from you. And I need you to take away my fear, because if you're directing me towards this, I can't do it being this fearful. And God, the next day I woke up and God had taken away my fear. And I knew that he was taking care of me and was going to lead me. And so, but yeah, so those were a lot of my fears. And how you conquer fears is by just doing it. Like, I just, like I said, I found one girl who homeschooled, and I think I didn't know her very well. I think it was like, she was a Facebook friend that somebody added, you know, sometimes you get friends that like, you don't really know.
Yeah.
I sent her a message and was like, I think I'm gonna start homeschooling. Can you help me? And she added me to a homeschooling Facebook group. And that's where I started for my journey. But yeah, those were a lot of my fears. I really had a lot of fear.
And look at 6 years later, how far you've come and how confident you are in it and how well-rounded your kids are. That's just, you were definitely led down the right path.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just so beautiful when I look back, I've thought, why was I led in this direction? You know, like why did God, cause it was such a strong impression. And I thought, why was I really led this way? And there's so many things. I'm sure I'm still going to discover more as I go on, but my younger son has pretty severe ADHD, and putting him in a classroom would have just absolutely killed his spirit. Would have just really killed his spirit, being in a desk, being told to be quiet, be less than who you are, don't color things the wrong way, you know, all the stuff that people with ADHD are told. And I had a couple years under my belt before I started homeschooling him. And so I think that it was a blessing that I was more comfortable homeschooling before he came up for formal lessons. When COVID happened and all the shutdowns, our life didn't change. We were comfortable doing what we were doing.
Right.
I was able to help some of my friends who chose to homeschool that year. Not all of them are still homeschooling. But one lady in particular in our neighborhood texted me one day and she said, Thank you so much for being such a great example. Seeing how well adjusted your kids were gave me the confidence to start homeschooling. And
awesome.
Yeah. So that there's been a lot of blessings that have come from being led this way, but I feel like I'm still learning, and I'll probably continue to find reasons why God led me down this path.
When COVID hit, I mean, you were probably like, wow, you have been preparing me for this. Wow. Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, because your kids probably didn't skip a beat.
No. Well,
I mean, and I don't know how it was in Idaho, but it was pretty tough around here in New York. The school kids, I can't even imagine what they went through.
Well, and I had a friend that had like five or six kids that each of them had their own times to be on Zoom and their own little packets from the teacher. And I just told her, girl, you don't need to be doing, like, I don't know how you can teach six kids all four subjects every day. Nobody can do that. Like, I couldn't do that.
Right.
And I said, just pull them out, do some of your subjects family style. Some of your kids are close in age. They could probably even do their language arts together. You know, it would be so much easier for you.
That's brilliant. I never thought of that. That for these parents who all of a sudden they're learning to work from home and they have all their children at home, how much easier their life actually would have been if they pulled them out and then did this family style. Because what I'm envisioning is if you have kids that are in all different grades, okay, well, we're going to read this story together. You know, you, the youngest one, can you find the letter A? And, you know, the next one, can you read me the word? And maybe the next child, can you read me the sentence? The next one, just how it can kind of increment on each other, but it's still family style learning. And that here are these parents scrambling around. No wonder alcohol rates went up. And I can't even imagine. My son was three, so we pulled him from daycare because we didn't want him masked. And I was learning to work from home, but I was like, this is kind of nice. I enjoy being at home. And, you know, once I got the hang of it, and I had family help me out with my son, but I was lucky that they were as young and I only had the one child. But wow, I didn't even think about how much more the lives of parents would have benefited if they just pulled them out of what the schools were all demanding at the time and homeschooled.
Yeah. Well, and if you look at knowledge, you can break knowledge into skills and content, and anything that's content based, like your grammar, your science, your social studies, your geography, all of that is content that can be taught family style. You teach kind of to the oldest child, and the younger kids kind of pick up on what they're developmentally ready to pick up on. The skills, the skills like learning how to read and math, those are the ones that need to be done independent. But anything that is content-based can be taught as family style.
Oh, that is so interesting. I feel like mine just blown like so many times in this last hour. My last question for you is, because this is just what people think, Katie, are your kids weird? Homeschoolers are weird. Did you know?
Oh my God. If loving God is weird, then we're weird. If loving to learn is weird.
Well, you know what? In public school today, they would probably say that. But if your kid thought they were a cat, that's totally normal. Right?
Right. Yeah. No, you know, what's funny is I find, like I said before, it really comes down to your family dynamics. And I also think there's a lot of things to be said about individual personality. Like my son that's 11, he is just as a natural born leader. And no matter where he goes, people follow. Like it's funny. Oh. I try to teach him to be a leader for good, right? But he's very, very naturally a leader. And kids are drawn to him no matter where he goes. Where I have other kids that are a little more, they like to do more independent things and be creative. My kid that has ADHD is my son that's 9. He's super creative and he learned how to hand knit from watching a YouTube video and hand knit a blanket in 4 days, you know? So
no way.
Are we weird? I wouldn't say we're weirder than anybody else. I actually have a degree in psychology and I worked 8 years in an inpatient psychiatric hospital. And I actually taught like social skill groups therapy groups and things like that. And I think that everybody has value. I don't like the label weird. I actually don't like labels at all. Yeah. I don't like kids being labeled as gifted, which is might be kind of controversial. I just don't like labels. People are people, and we love people for who they are. And homeschooling will not make you different. You are who right. you are based on your personality, your family dynamics, your environment you're in, how you learn and how you're educated has no bearing on who you are as a person.
So yeah. true. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
The biggest shock to me when I started homeschooling was that I didn't feel different. Like, I didn't feel like a teacher. I just felt like a mom. You already, as a mom, you're teaching your kids things every day. You teach your toddlers how to put on clothes. You teach kids how to potty train. You teach them correct table manners. You're teaching your children all the time. And if you have kids in public school, or you will, they will be doing homework every day. And you'll be sitting and doing homework with them. And homeschooling really isn't super different than that. Whereas you might be doing an hour of homework with your children in the evening, with homeschooling, you might be doing 2 or 3 hours of work in the morning when they're well rested, they're well fed, they're in a comfortable environment, their brains are ready to learn for the day. And but that was the biggest shock to me, was that it just felt so natural. It just felt like I was just being mom. I was being who I already was. And wow. That honestly, like I said, it was just the biggest shock.
That is just so like peaceful to hear. And it takes the pressure off, you know. I know for myself, trying to decide what to do, it's, can I be this sole teacher of life for a child? And, you know, yeah, take the pressure off and just keep expanding on what you're already doing. And it really makes it feel doable. So thank you so much.
Yes.
I hope you'll come back again one day.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you'd like links for anything that we talked about today, check out our show notes. If you enjoyed what you heard, please share with friends, like and subscribe to this podcast, and if you're really feeling helpful, leave me a review. We'll see you next week.